everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say welcome home, ladies and gentlemen. But let me just explain to you a little bit that in this podcast, I shall talk about animation. But in this case, I could make a little bit of a few exceptions, but I'll explain that a little bit later. But anyways, mostly though, this is all about the latest news that happened in animation this week. Some of these will include right now regarding Arc Productions and their sudden shutdown, like they immediately filed for bankruptcy. Then we will be looking into The Secret Life of Pets 2. Then we will be looking into a petition proving that a lot of people cannot take other people's opinions very well. Then afterwards, we will be looking at the man who will be playing Ryuk. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Now, to start things off right here, I hate to really do this because, well, okay, I don't mean that I hate doing, the Animation Podcast or anything. I love it. But what I mean is that I hate to start things off on a really low note on something that is kind of serious and it's actually pretty bad. Now, some of you may not know about the studio known as Arc Production, but recently the Toronto-based studio just immediately filed for bankruptcy. And, this just literally happened overnight. Suddenly, one day, things were going fine in, with the studio, and then suddenly, everything just turned off. And, what ended up happening was that, the artist would receive a letter from, the CEO of the company named Tom Murray. So, let me just take this little moment to read you the entire letter in full. So, dear all, we regret to inform you that ARC is experiencing significant financial difficulties and a liquidity crisis. I am sorry about that. Despite the very best efforts of management to find a solution to this financial emergency, we have not been able to resolve this matter with our lender. Our lender attended in court Friday to seek the appointment of Deloitte Restructuring Inc. as court-appointed interim receiver, providing Deloitte with an oversight role of our business. The lender intends to return to court on Thursday, August 4th, to seek the appointment of Deloitte as a full receiver to take possession and control of the business. When appointed, the receiver will be communicating with you directly. In the meantime, please feel free to reach out to Deloitte as of tomorrow afternoon. We are still working diligently to find a solution that will allow us to pay outstanding wages due to you, but in the events that the wages are not paid and the receiver is appointed, there is a federal government program known as the Wage Earner Program, where employees of the companies that have gone into receivership may be able to take claim for unpaid wages, severance, and vacation pay. We understand that the current amount payable through this program is up to approximately $3,900 per individual. However, the receiver will be providing you with the information on the program, its requirement. The office will be locked as of Tuesday, August 2nd. Employees should not come to work unless they are asked by Deloitte, and wait to hear from Deloitte about picking up your personal belongings. On a personal level, I want to know how proud that I've been to work with all of you and how much I have appreciated your commitment to our clients and loyalty to the company. I am so sorry that, spite of all this effort, I have been unable to resolve this crisis and apologize for this failure. Sincerely, Tom. So basically, we don't know, if you guys can decode this, then you pretty much can get the big picture that there have been some shady behind-the-scenes backgrounds that apparently, that, like, the, so far, ARK Productions had bad relationship with their lender. They had to go to court and all that stuff. And so far, things are not really looking good. And now, it seems like this Deloitte is pretty much owning the entirety of this company. And with all that said, all the artists are pretty much going to go and lose their jobs, basically. Now, with all that said, some of you might be wondering, why is it that you guys should care? Like, do you, like, maybe ARK Productions is not as big of a familiar name as something like DreamWorks, Blue Sky, or Pixar. But I will tell you, ARK Productions has actually done some familiar work. Not necessarily the most popular work, but some things actually do sound familiar. For one, they are actually, like, beforehand, in 2011, they used to be known as Stars Animation, and they used to have provided the they used to have provided some animated works, including movies like The Pirates Who Don't Do Anything, a VeggieTales movie, Nine, and Gnomeo and Juliet. They have also done some of the recent work for Thomas and Friends. Not only that, but they also did some, like, Lego and Marvel crossovers, like Lego Marvel Super Heroes, Avengers Reassembled. Recently, they have been working on Elena of Avalor for Disney, and they were working on the Tarzan and Jane series for Netflix. But not only that, they were even recently working on an animated feature that would have been distributed by Open Road Films called Blazing Samurai, which is a bit of a parody, well, not a parody, but it's like kind of a spiritual successor to Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles, which Mel Brooks would be on, but at this point, with the entire studio shut down, we don't fully know what's going on with Blazing Samurai. We don't have any confirmation on what's going on with the production. And, you know, this is actually very unfortunate, but one thing that that I do want to mention, on my source here from Cartoon Brew, it does mention also that the way that they do pay their employees, like, one way, it's not, like, under the normal circumstances, but it says here on its website, which has now been taken down, ARK touted how its clients enjoyed the benefits of Canadian tax credits, production subsidiaries, and grants. But despite all the free money that the company received from the Canadian government, it still couldn't manage to operate with its means. It is unclear what went wrong with ARK, but we do know that the studio was aggressively expanding its workforce earlier this year. The first sign that something was wrong was last Friday when employees were told that they were being paid because of a glitch. Now, according to CEO Tom Murray, the company has no money to pay its artists anymore. Oh, great. So basically, the artists are paid by the Canadian tax dollars. Oh, great. Now, at least now I know that my money is freaking well spent. Okay, but anyways, honestly, this is always an unfortunate circumstance. Whenever there's, like, an animation studio like this that would end up being shut down, and maybe, like, we won't 100% know what actually happened, like, what led to the ultimate downfall of ARK Productions. But, you know, honestly, at this rate, I don't really care much about the company. I don't really care much about, like the upcoming projects of what's going to happen. Like, I don't care what's going to happen to, like, either Thomas and Friends or Elena of Avalon or even Blazing Samurai. What I am focused on is what the fridge is going to happen with the hundreds of artists. I mean, like, as I stated before, literally just overnight, hundreds of artists in Toronto, suddenly they just lost their jobs. Like, it was all over. Suddenly they got this email saying that, don't come to work anymore. The whole thing is shut down. There's going to be a day when you can come in to get your belongings and get out of here. Like, literally, that's it. Like, what's going to happen to them? And unfortunately, like, even in this day and age, it's not easy, like, working as an artist. Now, of course, that there are many other opportunities, like, considering that it is Toronto, it is a very strong creative force. And from what I know, like, I'm sure, like, ARK Productions wasn't the only animation studio that's out there. Like, I'm sure artists can still find some visual effects shops or somewhere around the world, like somewhere around those lines, somewhere like the artist can actually have a job. I mean, worst case scenario, they can move to other places. Like, I know Montreal is always hiring for, like, always in need for artists. We're always, we're always in need for artists, considering that we have a strong business in terms of video games, and like we're expanding upon movies, like in terms of visual effects and all that stuff. So like, I don't know what's going on with the artists. Like, maybe they'll find a new job elsewhere. Maybe they'll find a new job in Toronto. But seriously, I'm just hoping for the best for them, because like the like out of all the people in the, like, when ARK production shut down, the ones who had to pay the most, it's not even just the Canadian taxpayer like me. It's actually the artists who have to ultimately, like, they get the short end of the stick. Unfortunately, they lost their jobs. So, honestly, I'm just hoping for the best for them. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I do hope that, like, there are some, like, companies out there who are going to go and help. I don't know. I like, this really does, it's never a good news when an animation studio shuts down, because like it's so much of a burden for many people. And I mean, like, what's going to happen now? Like, yeah, sure. Maybe there's going to be a chance that like the for projects like Blazing Samurai or Elena of Avalon or Thomas of France, like they have to look elsewhere to, you know, make their craft, like to get more products out there. But, you know, for the animators, I don't know. I'm just, you know, I hope that they're going to do well in the future. I hope that they'll still find a job elsewhere. I don't know. That's pretty much my main concern, is that are the hundreds of artists who worked at ARK Productions are going to be okay? That's the question that I'm asking. But yeah, it sucks, but yeah, we just lost ARK. Okay, so for our next story, we are going to lighten the mood a bit. I know that, you know, it's a bit sad that we lost an animation studio and hundreds of artists lost their jobs, but, you know, let's try to lighten the mood. Let's talk about something that's a bit more positive. And, you know, let's actually talk about something that's more successful. And recently, like, my God, it is honestly really crazy how The Secret Life of Pets is actually doing extremely well. Now, this week, The Secret Life of Pets has actually surpassed $300 million domestically. This is not worldwide, just domestically. And it has yet to be released in several other countries. So there could be a strong possibility that this could be another animated feature that could surpass $1 billion. It's not that hard to imagine. So with that said, Universal Pictures and Illumination Entertainment, they saw this, they saw how big and how successful the movie is going, so they decided to immediately announce that they are going to make The Secret Life of Pets 2. Now, there is no confirmation regarding who's going to be in it, who among the cast is going to be there, like if there's going to be new people involved. But they have mentioned that the people who made the film, like writer Brian Lynch and director Chris Renaud, are going to be returning in their proper positions to work on the sequel. Now, there actually is one massive catch regarding The Secret Life of Pets 2, something that is pretty unexpected and it kind of surprised me, is that the release date is surprisingly soon. Like, they have actually scheduled it a lot sooner than you would ever expect, because they have actually announced that the sequel will be released on July 13th, 2018. That's pretty much 2 years from now. And, honestly, out of all the things in this, like, 2018 is actually the one that is that's kind of surprising to me. But if I may go into my source here at Deadline, it actually did mention this actually was sort of cheeky public secret hinted at by a previously announced date for an untitled Illumination franchise film. So, like, that's one of the things that kind of got me confused and weirded out about this news, is the fact that for some reason, they knew that The Secret Life of Pets was going to be a hit. Like, honestly, if they would release The Secret Life of Pets 2 in 2019, then I wouldn't mind. Like, okay, you know, that, like, that's fine as usual. Usually an animated feature would probably take somewhere around the lines of, like, 3 years or something like that. Like, 3 years or definitely a lot more, but you get the idea. But honestly, it's, like, I got a feeling for some reason, it's like, Universal or Illumination knew very well that this was going to be a somehow they knew this was going to be a hit. They knew that people were going to eat this up, despite, like, a lot of people would just say that, you know, like, they would say that it's good. Like, not great, but good. Like, they knew it was going to be a massive hit, so they immediately worked on the sequel, which, honestly, is a massive gamble. I gotta say, sometimes, like, you never know. Maybe The Secret Life of Pets would have been a flop, and they would be still working on the sequel. You never know. But, yeah, like, that was the one thing that did weird me out. But in terms of the sequel itself, the fact that they have announced that characters like Max and Duke and Snowball are going to come back into this film, some of you might be wondering, how do I feel regarding this? How do I feel regarding the fact that there is going to be another Secret Life of Pets 2? Now, if you guys don't remember, if you haven't seen my review, I did mention that the first movie, you know, like I said, it was good. It was not great, but still good. I mean, like, sure, the plot itself is pretty weak, and it's basically kind of a copy of, like, Toy Story and stuff like that. It's not the best writing that it has, but I definitely enjoyed the animation, and the characters are definitely fantastic. So, with all that said, I am absolutely open to a Secret Life of Pets 2. I wouldn't mind seeing a Secret Life of Pets 2, actually. Because the thing is that possibly the strongest asset of the Secret Life of Pets, it's the characters. Like, this is the kind of group of characters, like, they're actually large in both quantity and also quality, that, you know, they're actually likable characters. Some of them are actually really memorable. And this is actually the kind of film that you would walk out with at least one character that you would absolutely adore. Like, for me, I came out and I actually really enjoyed both Snowball and Pops. Those are two fantastic characters. And with that said, because the characters are so likable, it really does open up to a lot of possibilities to turn this into a franchise. And even though, yes, the story in the first movie is not that strong, but maybe Brian Lynch and Chris Renaud can definitely make things up with a new, bigger and better story for The Secret Life of Pets. Like, that's the one thing that's definitely interchangeable when you make a sequel. Like, okay, sure, the characters, you know, they gotta stay the same in order for the people who love them would love them more when they come back. But the story, you can pretty much change it all you want. And the fact that they would change the weakest asset from the first movie, it definitely is great. And plus the fact, not only that, but also the animation, I gotta say, it's fantastic. Like, sure, this is another, like, this is basically the same thing as Oliver and Company, where you got talking animals in New York City. But then again, this is actually one of the very few movies, like, not just animated films, but movies in general that I've seen that, like, it's set in New York City, and it feels like New York City. Now, yeah, sure, I don't live in New York City, but I've frequently been there, like, a lot, so I know how New York City feels, and this actually does successfully capture it. And they even do that without going onto some of the massive landmarks. Like, you always see them go into Central Park or like Times Square to say that it's New York City, but in here, like, you can feel like it's New York City, so it definitely works. So yeah, with all that said, Like with the way that The Secret Life of Pets is set up, it is absolutely made to be a franchise, because the one big thing is that the one thing that really has the sequel going for them is to have these characters back on the big screen, and that, like, that's really going to be very advantageous to The Secret Life of Pets 2, because that's the one thing that everybody is going to be excited for. Like, because who wouldn't want to see, like, who wouldn't want to see more of characters like Snowball or Gidget or Mel or Pops or Snowball or Max or Duke, you know? Like, we want to see more of, like, we want to see more of these crazy characters go on these crazy adventures. So it definitely works out. And, yeah, I know that usually, like, with something like Illumination, they're just, you know, they're only pulling off franchises. And even though, like, nowadays, like, they're not really doing a lot in terms of the number of franchises that they have. Like, you can tell right now they are pretty dependent on the Despicable Me film, since they are a massive money grabber. But then again, like, even though, like, this year they are trying to really prove themselves that they can make some original products. Like, they proven themselves to be very successful with The Secret Life of Pets. We'll see if lightning can strike twice when they're going to release Sing. So, like, the fact that they did successfully manage to make The Secret Life of Pets into a brand new franchise, that I feel, you know, that I feel like, it's worthy to turn into a franchise, you know? I'm definitely open to see more of The Secret Life of Pets. So, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? We'll just wait and see how it goes when the movie will be released on July 13th, 2018. Okay, so for our next story, this is not technically going to be about animation, but this is more going to be on a subject that is more closer towards me. This is something that I've recently talked about in length, and this only proves just more on how, this only proves how nowadays people cannot take criticism seriously, whether it be about themselves or rather it be about a movie that they really like. Well, it's like nowadays, for people, they only care about what they think about a movie. Anybody who says otherwise, like, it sounds like they just want to go and burn them to the stake. And what I am talking about, of course, is going to be about the recent live-action DC films. I'm talking about movies like Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, the recent Suicide Squad, and technically I can throw in Batman the Killing Joke as well, considering that if you go on the website Rotten Tomatoes, you'll find that they have a lot of negative reviews. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, it has like around less than 30%, I believe. Hold on, actually, let me go to, let me just take a little moment to go to Rotten Tomatoes to actually just fully check on what's up. Hold on a sec, it's just loading. Alright, come on, okay, there you go. Going right here. Okay, come on. Okay, there we go. Okay, so, yeah, going right over here, as I'm recording this, Batman, oh, fudge nab, okay, it got a lot less than I expect. Okay, so, according to the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes, Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice has a total of 27%, which is rotten, and Suicide Squad, even though it's just been released, it has an equivalent, it has a bad rating that is pretty much equal, which is 26% rotten. And even The Killing Joke, let me just get into that one. The Killing Joke, what was once the most highly, and what the fridge? Hold on a sec. Okay, come on, work with me, Rotten Tomatoes. Hold on a sec. Okay, so, like, even The Killing Joke failed to contact the origin. What the fridge? Okay. Anyways. Oh, no, wait a minute. Oh, I know how to go through this. I know how to go around this. Okay, anyways, as I was saying, The Killing Joke, what was once the highest sell, like, what was once the most anticipated, once upon a time, it was the most anticipated Okay, there we go. Okay, now I'm ready to do it. Okay, like, the Batman the Killing Joke. Once upon a time, it was the most highly anticipated Batman animated feature of all times. Now, nowadays on Rotten Tomatoes, it got a grand total of 53% rotten. So yeah, things are not really going well with DC films. So, like, with DC fans, my god, I don't know what happened to them, but, I guess, you know, mentioning Batman the Killing Joke, I guess the Joker himself said it best, that if you want to be as mad as him, all it takes is just one bad day, and it looks like they've been having several bad days, like trying to deal with the negative reviews that these movies have gotten. And the DC fans, they ain't having it. Like, they love these movies, and they somehow have a huge vendetta over Rotten Tomatoes. Specifically Rotten Tomatoes. Not Metacritic, not Metacritics, not the rating system of IMDb, just Rotten Tomatoes. So much so that apparently DC fans decided to make a petition at change.org for to go and shut down entirely the website of Rotten Tomatoes because of the negative reviews on because of the negative reviews that movies like Suicide Squad, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice had been gotten. Now, if I may go to the petition right here, I'm just going to say this right now. As I am recording this, you guys are probably shocked. Now, the thing is that the amount of signatures that this petition wanted to get, like, they're asking for 25,000. Do you know how many they have right now as I'm recording this? 21,000. They're almost there. They just need 4,000 signatures, and, like, the petition will be made. Like, rather if it's going to be, rather if it's going to happen or not, then, we don't know. But anyways, like, the petition, it says here, don't listen to film criticism. There's a disconnect between critics and audiences. You may enjoy a movie regardless what critics say about it. We must get the people to know that the criticism's not the measure of the quality of a movie, but just the, but, wait, hold on. We must get the people to know that the criticism's not the measure of the quality of movies, it's just the opinions of the critics. Okay, I don't know. Like, I just realized, it's like, wait a minute, this is just, this is bad English right here. And this is actually done by apparently someone named Abdullah Coldwater. This is the guy who made this petition. And maybe I'm not doing a favor in this situation, considering that, like, technically, I'm pretty much doing like a lot of people out here, just discuss, you know, like giving light on this petition here. But I just have to talk about this because the thing is, recently, I have actually made a video that touched upon this subject. It is called "Is Rotten Tomatoes a Bad Website?" And, like, I pretty much discussed it in length. Like, you guys can go check it out after this podcast. But in short, basically what I've been telling is that, I described about what Rotten Tomatoes is all about. Like, I talked about regarding how it works and how it can also be a flawed website. How, like, it's not, like, the rating that you see is not how good or bad the movie is, but it's more about how many critics like it or how many critics don't. So, like, the 26% you see on Suicide Squad, it is actually 26% of film critics actually liked it in comparison to the other, hold on, let me just do some math, 74% of critics who didn't like it. And trust me, like, I can understand that there are some film critics, like, sometimes they can be very harsh, especially to something like Suicide Squad. I remember I even saw a review on 9Lives, and even that, like, I think it was the review of Forbes.com that said that 9Lives is still better than Suicide Squad. So yeah, even I have to admit that is kind of harsh. But yeah, like, but overall, what I said is that there's nothing wrong with the Rotten Tomatoes site. It's just doing its job. The real problem of Rotten Tomatoes is the people that use it. The people that misinterpret the tomato meter as if, the percentage that you see, it actually indicates how much, what is the percentage of how much a movie is good or bad, and how people, the ones who really ruin the website are those who actually use the percentage, and they would use it as a counter argument to someone else's opinion. Like, trust me, film critic myself, I've had to deal with so many people who try to debunk what I say about a movie, saying it has this much percentage on Rotten Tomatoes, so it is good or not, or it is good or it is bad, so your argument about it is wrong. Like, oh my god, and trust me, those people, anybody who does that is an absolute idiot. And yes, they absolutely deserve to be hit in the head with a freaking crowbar. Like, those are terrible people. And they're, because they just want to use it to improve their argument, when in reality, it shouldn't even be a freaking argument. But I will say that in this case, with the petition right here, with how DC fans are jumping into this petition to try to shut down Rotten Tomatoes because they give bad reviews on just a few movies that they disagree, that apparently they disagree with the critics with, holy crap, it's just honestly, it's really pathetic, honestly, it really is. I mean, with DC, honestly, I don't know what it is with Rotten Tomatoes, but it really made DC fans really pathetic and also really insane at the same time. I'm not saying all of them, though. I'm not saying all of them, but the ones that are, fueled with rage against the critics, down to the point that now they're starting to be, conspiracy theorists where they believe that Disney and Marvel are now paying the critics to give positive reviews over their movies. Because we need to have this grand battle of Marvel versus DC, and this is apparently the desperate attempt that DC fans are trying to do to make the Marvel movies look bad, is to say that, Disney Disney pays critics. And honestly, believe it or not, actually, I remember on Twitter, I recently had to deal with a fan like that once. And it's honestly really crazy. I mean, you could tell that this guy is just, this psychotic Trump supporter. And you could tell that, you could tell this person actually is a Trump supporter. Because, looking at his Twitter feed and stuff like that, he has the mental capacity and the same amount of likability as a Nazi. And also, you look at his profile, and he describes himself as a defier of Disney and Marvel films, and also of bronies and anime and animation and homos and furfags. And I kid you not, that is his words, by the way. That's his words. He is a defier of homos and furfags. That's when you could tell he's a little psychotic Trump supporter right there. And I decided, I remember I went on Twitter, I just had so much freaking fun. Oh my god, I decided to troll him bad. It made me feel great about myself. It made me feel like I reached Bugs Bunny levels of trolling. And I remember, I just posted, I just saw, because he out of nowhere just message, he just randomly messaged about me saying, all you do is just review kids' films, and you're just a freaking man child with a fedora. These movies are not made for you, but a Heil Trump, all that stupid stuff. And I decided to, it's just so stupid, I had to post about it. And, the only conclusion that I could find is that, he was just, and yeah, by the way, I know that he is a DC fan because, even his Twitter handle, the images that he uses is that, you got the Justice League, and, his picture is actually Ben Affleck's Batman, and, he even describes himself as a DC fan, so, pretty much I was thinking, maybe he's just, like, throwing his anger towards me because he's just so butthurt regarding the, you know, the reviews, like, the negative reviews of Suicide Squad. And I remember, oh my god, he even replied to me saying, like, Suicide Squad is for real, Suicide Squad is a movie for real adults, not like Zootopia that's made for toddlers and fur fags. Which is really is ironic, considering that the movie for toddlers and fur fags is actually the kind of film that, you know, it's the one that critics seem to be universally praising, and also audiences are praising it, down to the point that pretty much the majority of people, or at least the normal functioning people, gave the movie $1 billion. So, yeah, that kind of contradictory right there. But, yeah, honestly, like, it's, like, I've, like, pretty much what I'm trying to say here, like, I had to deal with people like this, and it honestly really is crazy how, like, nowadays, we live in an age where, for some reason, people take their opinion on movies so personally, especially, like, even if it's not released yet, even if a movie is not released yet, people will go freaking insane. Case in point, look at what happened with the 2016 Ghostbusters. Like, it just went, like, people just went crazy, and the movie wasn't even out yet. And nowadays, like, because of all this mess, the movie itself had to suffer through it, and I think at this point, I think we can officially call it a box office bomb. So, that's the thing, is that people take it, like, for some reason, people have to take their opinions on movies so personally that, like, anybody who thinks otherwise, they take it as such a personal offense. Like, they get so insulted as if not agreeing with this person regarding a movie is like the equivalent of insulting their mother or having sex with their mother, you know? And honestly, this is just, and honestly, like, they just go hog wild. They just go really ridiculous. And trying to do something like this, even if the petition reaches, like, the $25,000 mark, like, it's not gonna happen. Rotten Tomatoes is not going to shut down just because by a bunch of butthurt fanboys. Now, I will agree that, like, even for me, I don't agree all the time with some of the ratings that Rotten Tomatoes has put up. Like, honestly, like, what, like, they just, a recent example, actually, is regarding The Little Prince. Like, it is high, like, I'm honestly really surprised that it's highly praised. Hold on, let me just get into it. Yeah, like, The Little Prince actually has, as I'm recording this, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if it really does deserve it that much. Like, I remember seeing the movie months ago in theaters, like, when it was able to release it in theaters in Canada, and I just thought, like, it's not a bad movie, but it's okay. Like, it's nothing that's really worth hyping up about, but, like, you know, like, it's okay, but I wouldn't say it's, like, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes good, you know? Like, I don't always agree with it. But down to the point that you have to be so mad over what a bunch of film critics say about the movie, like, you're not, like, this is not going to be a way to to pretty much shut the film critics up, you know? That's not going to work, guys. Like, even though Rotten Tomatoes is just doing its job to collect the reviews, and, like, you're still not going to change the minds of what film critics have said about this movie. So, like, honestly, I don't know why you have to bother so much with what critics have to say about it. Like, why? Because do you want to really prove, like, what do you have to prove if a movie, like, if one of the DC movies gets a fresh rating? I mean, like, what then? Like, what honestly are you going to prove if Suicide Squad would get a fresh rating? Really? Does it really make a difference? Like, if you like the movie, then you like the movie. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, you know? Like, and that, you know, and that's the thing. If you like Suicide Squad, that's great. That's fine. But honestly, if you're mad about others that they say that the movie is not great when you think it's great, like, what's your problem, man? Calm the fridge down. Okay, so for our next story, we're not entirely going back into animation in its entirety just yet, but we are going into something that is based around animation. And I am, of course, talking about Death Note. Death Note, as we know, is one of the really popular Japanese mangas released by Shonen Jump, and then it also got released released as an anime, a highly acclaimed anime, by the way, which recently I have seen the show, and I gotta say it is absolutely phenomenal. It was fantastic, really. So yeah, like basically we got Death Note out of the way, and it's definitely fantastic. And recently, Netflix is actually going to be creating a movie, which is an American live-action adaptation of Death Note. So instead of being set in Japan, most of it is going to be set in, L.A. or in the U.S., which, you know, it makes sense considering some parts of the story is actually taking place in L.A. Now, some of the stars that they got in includes Nat Wolff, and also Margaret Qualley, Keith Stanfield, Paul Nakowski, and Sean Wingham. But recently, there is one big news that pretty much went viral on the internet, and people thought it was just so crazy of an idea that it might as well work. And the thing is that they have announced who is going to be the voice of Ryuk, the Shinigami that sticks alongside, that pretty much sticks by the side of Light Yagami in his adventure. And apparently, according to Mashable, they actually brought in Willem Dafoe to be the voice of Ryuk. If there's anything else that I can add into this, I honestly don't know. Well, I guess I can read a few things, in the midst of filming Justice League, Willem Dafoe has closed a deal to voice Ryuk the Shinigami in Adam Wingard's adaptation of the popular Japanese manga, Death Note, that will debut next year on Netflix. Mashable has exclusively learned. The project was initially set up at Warner Brothers before moving to Netflix, which is currently in production on the project. Now, I'm sure some of you guys might be familiar with Willem Dafoe, with a lot of movies, including the recent Spider-Man films, John Carter, John Wick, and the Fallen Our Stars. And coming soon, he's also going to be in The Great Wall. And like I said before, he's going to be in the upcoming Justice League. But in terms of animation, Willem Dafoe has definitely used his voice very well. You might remember Willem Dafoe's voice as Gil in Finding Nemo, and he is also the voice of Rat in Fantastic Mr. Fox. And now that he is going to be doing the voice of Ryuk, wow, actually that makes a lot of sense. This is kind of the idea that I feel like the more that I think about it, the more that it makes a lot of sense. Because, the thing is, when you think about it, Willem Dafoe does have a bit of that creepy voice that sounds a bit like, he has a bit of a voice that sounds like he's a very dangerous person. And, sorry, I'm just simultaneously trying to look up at a few things. But yeah, this is very fan, the hiring Willem Dafoe is just, it's just pure genius, because he actually does sound like, he has this voice that sounds like death. Yeah, and by death I mean it has a bit of that eeriness. He has a bit of it has a bit of that dark edge. It has something that you're unsure about it. You're unsure how, if you should trust this person. And, honestly, if you go into the anime, or at least the English dub, where you listen to the voice of, Brian Drummond, he actually does a fantastic voice, by the way. I feel his performance as Ryuk, it's definitely fantastic. It's definitely great. And, you can actually hear a bit of similarities. There is a part of, Willem Dafoe that you can hear in Brian Drummond's performance. And now that, like Willem Dafoe is doing it, like that's when you can hear, like that actually does feel like he could be a great star-studded Ryuk. And as for the movie itself, I don't know how it's going to be, rather if it's going to stand up in the same ranks as the manga and the anime. That I'm not 100% sure. Like honestly, like it's the kind that like we gotta wait and see until the movie actually does come out. And I am interested to check out the review, like not the review. I mean, like I am interested to check out how the movie is when it's going to be released on Netflix. Like I'll be interested to give it a shot, but. Who knows? Maybe this will be great, maybe this will not, but honestly, the idea of bringing in Willem Dafoe as Ryuk, that is, so far, it is a good step in the right direction. And like I said, we'll have to wait and see how the movie will go when it will be released next year on Netflix. And finally, we shall now end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. And now, with this one, okay, oh boy, like, it's honestly, it's one of those kinds of news that it's really hard to believe, but somehow, like, it exists. Like, somehow, this is actual news. This is actually going to be a thing that's going to happen. Why? I don't know. But let me just give you guys a bit of a throwback. Do you guys remember when I talked about Ice Age on Ice? When I made my discovery that apparently Ice Age on Ice is going to be a thing where it's a live show where you look at the Ice Age characters on in an ice skating show in the same veins of Disney on Ice, but now it's Ice Age on Ice. Well, believe it or not, there is another live show that's based on an animated film, but it is even stupider than Ice Age on Ice. Because the thing is, with an idea like Ice Age on Ice, you know that there's going to be some people who's going to watch it. But now, for the first time ever, I believe that they are now going to make a show literally made for no one. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you The Nut Job Live! Yes, do you guys remember The Nut Job? You know, the movie with that douchebag squirrel that nobody likes? The one that apparently made little money at the box office, but somehow they're making a freaking sequel out of it? With all the freaking squirrels and all the other freaking animals. And then at the end, they all gotta do freaking Gangnam Style. And like, and especially the fact that Gangnam Style was already outdated when the movie was released. Yeah. Now they're turning that into a freaking live show. And you know what's even more insane? Is that some of the people that made Cirque du Soleil are going to make this. I kid you not. Now, okay, let me just go over here in my source here from Cartoon Brew, saying that a South Korean animation producer Red Rover has teamed up with Canadian performing arts company Mon Love to create The Nut Job Live. Mon Love, founded by Cirque du Soleil composer Ella Louise Allaire, with Martin Lord Ferguson as partner, also created Ice Age Live, A Mammoth Adventure, which is now in its third year of touring. Which, by the way, I just want to mention that Ice Age Live, A Mammoth Adventure, I double-checked on it. This is not Ice Age on Ice. This is actually a different production. Okay, so going more into this. The stage direction of the Nut Job Live is scheduled to be led by Guy Caron, one of the founding members of the first artistic director of Cirque du Soleil, and the world tour of the show will be coordinated by Barry Garber of Garber IMC. Nut Job Live is intended to run for 4 years in over 100 countries and will be accompanied by DVD sales, t-shirts, character plushies, and other merchandising sold on the site. And now let's go to a quote here from a representative at Red Rover. We are excited that The Nut Job will be coming out of the screen into areas to meet with fans all over the world. Yeah, fans, all three of them. This is a bold step for Red Rover, and with The Nut Job Live being created together with the production team behind some of the greatest Cirque du Soleil productions, we feel that the quality and success of the show are already ensured. We believe Mon Love will outdo even the already stellar performance of Ice Age Live. Okay, with all that said, let me tell you right now, okay, now, like, I can tell you this right now. I am not a fan of Ice Age. Like, me and, like, almost everybody can, like, can say that they are not fans of Ice Age. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Okay. Let me explain my biggest problem with this. You know, with something like Ice Age Live or Ice Age on Ice, that I can understand why they would want to make it. Because the thing is, like, as crazy of an idea that sounds with Ice Age, like with a live Ice Age show, at the very least, you know that there's going to be an audience for it. I mean, there's no denying that Ice Age, yes, it is true, like what they've advertised, it is the most successful animated franchise there is. Like, now with all of their 5 movies, they've made a total of more than $3 billion at the box office. And especially with, other, like, even though it's not as big in the US, it is big in other countries, like Brazil, in Mexico, in some areas in Europe, in China, in all these places. Like, you can tell that there is an audience for Ice Age who would legitimately want to see Ice Age live. With the nut job, on the other hand, who would want to watch that? And the thing is that they're, like, the thing is that, like, the nut job is one of those very few movies that, very few people have seen. And barely any of those people who have seen it actually liked it. Hold on, let me just double check on something about the nut job. I just gotta go on Box Office Mojo here. And looking at this, the movie only made a grand total of like $120 million worldwide and just $60 million domestically. And keep in mind, like, and it's only been in, like, just a few places around, and just, like, it's only been released in a few, a good amount of places around the world, but, yeah, like, those places, they've barely made any money, for God's sakes. But, like, the thing is that the movie made $120 million, so, why put this up in over 100 countries? Like, I don't even think 100 countries know about the nut job. Or at the very least, if they care about the nut job. For God's sake, it's like, honestly, this is desperately pushing something into a franchise. Like, this is desperate even more, like, this is even more desperate than Sony to push something into this big franchise. It's already enough that we have to deal with a freaking sequel that's coming out next year that nobody demanded. But now that they're doing a freaking Ice Age, like, a nut job live? I remember I posted this on Twitter and I received there was nobody who was excited for it. In fact, like, there were a lot of people who were mocking it, thinking that the only thing that's worth watching in this show is just going to be a bunch of people in freaking fursuits that are going to do the Gundam style. Like, seriously, like, why? And, like, the fact that they're, like, they really wanted to make this, like, this huge elaborate thing with Cirque du Soleil. Like, what? Like, really? Is it really that big of a deal? Like, it makes no, like, honestly, it blows my mind. Like, why would they want to make an entire, like, big production on, like, a big Cirque du Soleil level production on freaking the Nut Job Live? It makes no sense. Who's gonna watch it? Seriously. Like, what kind of people are gonna legitimately go out there and, like, legit, like, go and watch the Nut Job Live? Like, at the most, the only kind of people that I can imagine are just gonna be, like, those, like, the kind of, like, sleazy parents who don't care about their kids. They're just gonna leave, it's like, alright, kids, you go and watch the Nut Job Live, I'm just gonna go outside for a smoke. You know, like, those kinds of people. I mean, like, really? Like, is the Nut Job that big to the point that it deserves a live show? I can think of so many other animated franchises, they don't even have to be good franchises, that deserve a live show before the freaking Nut Job. And I mean, like, if anything, I feel like the Nut Job is one of those things in general that really makes a statement that having a franchise doesn't mean jack all anymore. Like, I remember there used to be a day when a sequel would be released, it would mean something. When something would have this big franchise, it would, like, it actually means something. It's actually important. You know, it, like, you could tell that, like, there, this animated, like, a movie made such a big significance culturally and financially and, like, creatively to the point that it deserves an encore. It deserves to be shown more. But in this case here, but with the nut job, like, not even just the nut job, now that we live in an age where, like, so many things that are franchises that shouldn't even freaking be franchises, I can think of so many of them, like, Alpha and Omega, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, freaking Planes, and even Norm of the North! Freaking Norm of the North! There's going to be, like, they want to turn that into an entire franchise and release some directed DVD sequels or whatever. Like, it really another example I could throw in, like, Open Season. Like, these are, like, these have no right to be franchises. And yet there are so much more, there are, like, so many sequels out there, so many unnecessary sequels that nobody asked for. And, like, The Nut Job is the prime example of them all. It's a movie that absolutely sucks, that nobody enjoyed, yet somehow they're pushing for more of them. Like, there, somehow the, like, Red Rover is so delusional to think that people actually enjoy this, to the point that not only are they doing a sequel, but now they're doing an entire live show, which makes no sense. Like, who's, like, that's the thing, it's that I'm looking at this, and who's gonna watch it? Seriously. Who's gonna, like, is there anybody out there who's legitimately gonna go and watch The Nut Job live because they want to see The Nut Job live on stage? Like, and I don't mean, like, ironically, not, you know, not for gags and giggles to see something stupid. I mean legitimately watch The Nut Job live. It's just so stupid. It's one of the dumbest ideas. This is like, you know, this is the equivalent of the Emoji Movie. This is an idea that's just so stupid that, like, you don't even know why it exists. You don't even know why people would want to go, like, you don't know who would be so stupid and so insane enough to go watch this. It's crazy. Like, there's no way this is going to be a hit. There's no way that this, like, I don't know. It's like, I'm sorry. It's just, this is one of the dumbest things that I've ever heard. Seriously, a live show of The Nut Job. I mean, what's next? Like, what are we gonna have next? Are we gonna have a live production of frickin' Escape from Planet Earth? Are we also gonna have a live show of Norm of the North? We might as well! The possibilities are frickin' endless at this point! I mean, my god, seriously, man. We just don't need this. I mean, we don't need this at all. But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. Just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you are listening to this episode if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!